This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Lynn Mark, and today I have with me on the line James Nayagam, Chairman of Suriana Welfare Society. Now, Suriana is a society dedicated to providing a voice for abused children and speaking up about issues affecting them. So thank you very much for joining us this morning, James.
Good morning.
So a lot has happened over the past month and a half, since the change in government, which happened at the end of February. What has Suriana been working on? You know, has there been much engagement with the new Minister of Women, Family and Community Development on children's issues?
Well, the first thing is there are two parts to this. The first part is the current lockdown and issues concerning families and children. And the second part is ongoing issues concerning rights of children and issues concerning children in terms of what's their best interest. So going by the first one, as far as the present lockdown situation, we're concerned of children as where parents are daily wage income earners. Then we've come across many, many cases where families are unable to cope with the food within the family. And so we have started a food aid program to provide dwellers in low-cost housing flats with food so that the children are able to have food, especially babies. They need milk. And we have received numerous requests for baby milk. So actually, it shows this time the poverty that is existing within the community. And we are ensuring that food is delivered to each of these families to ensure that these families are able to cope with that situation to such time that they... a day will come when they're able to go out and earn their daily living wage. So that is the situation now. In most of these areas, most of these families are unable to have any other source of income, and resources within the family are limited.
So what kind of coordination, perhaps, or support have you seen from the government in this time targeted at these low-income families and daily wage earners?
Basically, I think when they've come up with some announcements of taking money out of EPF and other incentives, but that does not seem to respond to the immediate need of a family. I need food today on my table. And if I put myself in a situation and subject myself to a family who needs food on the table immediately, whatever that has been mentioned over the media by various agencies does not seem to respond favorably to the simple need that I need food on the table. And what we are ensuring is immediately delivering food so that today there's food on the table. And I see that difference. And I'm looking at this kind of response where families are actually putting forth that they're saying we need food and we need food now. So my question is, where is the response? Where it is like a situation where there's a fire or where there is some form of disaster, and the quick response by various agencies, that is the type of response I'm talking about.
Mm.
But sadly, I don't see that. I see it in a different form of response that will take time, that will need application, that will need some form of processing. But the fact is, people need food on the table now. And this is where Suriana Welfare Society is responding immediately. Today, we're sending out our trucks all over these places to deliver food that children and families will have food on the table now, immediately and spontaneously.
And there was some confusion over whether or not the government would continue to allow food donations, certain donations from NGOs like yourself. Is this a problem that you've encountered?
You see, people must understand, we've been in this business of food aid for 40 over years. And generally, we all are known for, humbly that we are experts in this kind of thing. People must call NGOs for consultation before deciding. We have been working with the communities. We have vetted. We have a relationship with the community. We assess people's needs. We exactly know the market out there in the communities. And we are known. And we've been involved in every level of consultation. And now, all of a sudden, someone comes to and says, go through us. That doesn't seem to match. I would say, hello, you should actually be talking to us. We are the experts in this.
So, James, are you saying that there was no consultation with NGOs like yourself prior to the government making that announcement?
No, somebody made a statement and then generally said, okay, go through this. And my question is, hello, what have I been doing all these years? There must have been some consultation. They know the experts in this area. Then this is the trouble. People don't recognize the expertise they have in this country. And if they use this expertise, then it helps a lot in terms of professionalism and doing things professionally, not making statements, you know, and saying, okay, this is it, everybody must comply.
So, James, aside, though, from the food needs that are currently being faced by a lot of low-income families that have lost their revenue streams, we have heard reports that domestic violence is also increasingly a problem as families are trapped in the same house under a movement control order.
Yeah.
So what has Suriana seen that may perhaps back up these reports? Because, you know, the difficulty with domestic violence is that it happens behind closed doors. So unless government ministries perhaps come out with statistics, it very much seems like a problem in which no one quite knows the scale of.
You see, that is a big issue here, because let me tell you categorically in 5 points. The first point was, I was shocked when everybody was reported that the hotline to report child abuse cases was off, was closed. That's number one. Number two, there's no follow-up on cases where there have been child abuse. And because there's a lockdown, so people are not allowed to work. And so there's no follow-up of officers making their rounds. Thirdly, there's no reminder that don't you dare abuse any kids. But what we have is how the husbands answer their wives and wives answer the husbands. That's what I had. But we are not talking, we're not recognizing that a child is in the hands of the perpetrator 24 hours. What have we done to address that? And especially in the areas of sexual abuse, where the cases that have been coming to for reporting is where the man or the perpetrator tends to abuse the child every time the child is in his presence. And we all are aware that girls are vulnerable to sexual abuse, but then there's no reminder, there's no mention of this type of situations in our media. So nobody actually, this is where, you see, the so-called persons who are protectors should come out with a statement and should, through the media, inform perpetrators of would-be perpetrators of consequences where they abuse their children. So children, I don't know. And at this point of time, I'm not sure how the women are coping with domestic violence. You see, one must understand that abusing a child is just more than a slap. This is real abuse. domestic violence, real domestic violence, real violation of women's rights. But what are we doing? We are talking about all other things, which is which could be a minor as compared to major issues of protecting lives and protecting children.
Has Suriana received reports of domestic violence happening, perhaps in the areas in which she surveyed?
I'm aware of domestic violence of women because the man's presence is there. Each time the man went out, the woman has a sense of relief. But now the terror, the beast, the monster is now there 24 hours. The poor lady has got to put up with that. She's got nowhere else to run because she's limited in space. The child is got to put up with this monster, has got nowhere else to run. And this is what's happening. But because there's no way that these people can seek help, and the neighbors have no help because of social isolation and social distancing, we just hope that they will survive.
So is there no recourse for them, seeing as you said, you know, officers perhaps are not doing their rounds under this movement control order?
Well,
if a family
there's
is...
There's only one way around. That is, the police, which in some cases are going into... Well, so far the police have gone into condominiums. But I wish the police would make their rounds to the low-cost housing areas and to show their presence there, to make rounds to homes and to engage these people in some form of dialogue, make spot visits, on-the-spot visits to families, and then checking them and saying, is everything all right? That's the only way we are able to deal with that situation. Or maybe even government officers should come out of their lockdown situations and be exempted from from traveling and be issued permits to do likewise, to go into the areas which we know are high risk areas and do similar visits together with health care workers, because these are all what we're talking about is mental health, we're talking about physical health, we're talking about health in all sense, including medical.
It seems very strange that these government officials wouldn't have been placed in the field of essential services to begin with.
Yes, because I have not heard one word from any of these agencies as far as child protection and families are concerned. It's always talking about morality, it's talking about how you cope. But these are experts who are there, and they are very well aware of the situation. They should be able to come out and be able to now take some form of action and think that this, all these things are part of essential services.
Mm.
Protection of families, protection of children, protection of the aged. What about people looking after persons who are bedridden, persons who are with disabilities? You know, it's a stressful situation and they could be abused as well.
I'm speaking with James Nayagam, chairman of Suriana Welfare Society, a society dedicated to providing a voice for abused children and speaking up about issues affecting them. Up next, we're going to be looking at some other challenges facing children from vulnerable groups during this MCO, as well as talking about some outstanding child rights issues that Malaysia has yet to address. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, this is The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking with James Nayagam, chairman of Suriana Welfare Society, which is dedicated to providing a voice for abused children. Now, earlier, James, we were talking a bit about some of the food insecurity issues that are faced by children from low-income families, particularly during this time of the movement control order. But I'd also like to turn the focus very quickly now to education as well, because we were talking about, you know, safeguarding children's physical safety, but we also have to remember to safeguard the safety of their futures, because schools are shut,
Yes.
And education has been disrupted. A lot of schools now have to undertake independent initiatives to introduce e-learning, to hold webinars. But for children in abusive situations, is this a real viable means for them to get an education, considering they may not have, for example, access to the internet?
Yeah, because the situation that we're having now is the areas where we are involved in, low-cost housing areas, none. If there's five children, how can five children have laptops? And they all are sitting at the home, doing nothing, no access to education, period. And that's the situation. That's the reality of the whole situation. I've only seen children having laptops and access to online education if they are from private schools or home schooling. But generally, the families that I've been dealing with in all this, the low-cost housing areas, there are five children in one family, they can't even afford one laptop. So everything is disrupted. And going back to school is a strain theory. It's going to be a strain for them to go back and now catch up with the lost time.
And has anything been disseminated from the education ministry that you know of to try and help these students?
So far, I have not heard anything. Everyone is saying there's something that's available. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm on the ground. And I know that these children have had no access to education. Nothing. It's all cut.
Now, just taking a bit of a broader view, James, there are some. What are some of the outstanding issues in regards to children's rights that Malaysia is still seeing and still needs to address at this point?
Please help me help children where we are talking about child marriages. This is an issue that is not settled, and it still goes on from year to year. Settle it. Second issue is where children who are raped and where the perpetrator or the rapist can marry, is permitted to marry the child. Still no answer. And the other area of concern is, are our laws in line with the changes as it is involved, where it talks about cybercrime and online access by pedophiles and crime in terms of related to sexual grooming and bullying. And these things go on. But little has our laws have been updated to deal with the situations. And we do have the situations, but sadly, since the Richard Huckle case, proudly we come up with some law, but then it disappears, it evaporates, but it exists, but there's no follow-up, no implementation. As long as we have this kind of situation, I don't see how best we are going to progress. With cyberbullying and various other types of crimes and pedophiles preying on our children in this country, how much have we been effective in coming up with action, legislation to deal with that? That's a big question mark.
And James, what's your gauge of the current women's ministry's commitment to pushing through with all of this? Admittedly, very sensitive issues, right? Because child marriage, for example, there are religious elements to any kind of method to address these situations. And the Deputy Women's Minister only recently came out to say that any legislation would be continued only if it didn't infringe upon Islamic values. So is this... How would you propose then that the Women, Family and Community Affairs Ministry goes about dealing with issues like child marriage?
I tell you what, three things. Number one, and because I've been dealing with it at various levels and at a national and international level, number one is they must take their stand. Don't keep quiet. take a stand. If it's wrong, it is wrong. Number two, the only way that they can deal with such issues, which seems ever no ending, is having dialogue after dialogue after dialogue. And number three, if they are so, they must have a united stand, and they must take a stand and say and to implement these things and not leave it hanging in the air. What is frustrating is they proudly launch something, they talk about it, but when it comes to certain issues, sensitive issues, they all remain silent. And then the situation till now remains status quo. People are willing to put up with various other things, but not dealing with issues that are sensitive. Attend to it. Spend time. Dialogue. Find creative ways of dealing with it rather than just keeping the situation going on and on and on each and every year, but there's no solution in sight.
So now considering that we have a new government and this new government has yet to have its first parliamentary sitting, with all of that taken into consideration, what kind of legislation would Suriana like to see tabled as and when we finally do have our next parliamentary sitting?
Well, first of all, I would like to see our legislation up to date and not pre-war types of practice, that we should come to a point, that day and age, that where these are in terms of a protection of child's rights and taking into account that the well-being of the child is what we're looking at, then whatever it is, to be sincere, when we have signed the Convention on the Rights of the Child, then work towards it. Work towards elimination of torture or corporal punishment of children, then work towards providing children a name and nationality, work towards a protecting of children in terms of her rights, women's rights, protection of the rights of young women in terms of abuse and in terms of their marriage, and then take a stand, make a decision, pass the legislation, and implement it. Whenever I advise people from the media, I always tell them, don't go for statements like, we're looking into it, we're studying it, we hope to implement it. It doesn't go down well with me after so many years in this work. I want to know the date, the time, and the tracking system, when is to be implemented. Otherwise, I think people are just not meaning what they're saying.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, James. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
You're most welcome.
I've been speaking with James Nayagam, chairman of the Suriana Welfare Society. This has been The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Lynn Mark for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, encouraging you to stay home during this period of movement control.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.